This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Nehemiah. Pastor Sandy will begin teaching in Nehemiah chapter 10 on this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
That's what chapter 10's about. That's what we could entitle it. Signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. After hearing Ezra and God's word, and the Levites recount the history of Israel, the Jewish leaders took an oath, and they made a covenant to be fully devoted to God. In fact, we're told in the last verse of chapter 9, and because of all this, we make a sure covenant, and we write it, our leaders, our Levites, and our priests seal it. Notice what they did. They signed it. They sealed it. They delivered it. They said to God, I'm yours. Verse 1 tells us, now those who placed their seal on the document were, here's the first name, Nehemiah the governor, son of Hakaliah. When members of the Continental Congress signed the Declaration of Independence, their president, John Hancock, signed his name first. That fiery John Hancock penned his signature in big, bold, oversized letters. He said the reason he did it is he wanted King George to be able to read it without putting on his spectacles. Well, when the Jewish leaders signed this declaration of commitment to God, Nehemiah goes first. I wonder if he signed his name as large as John Hancock. He was certainly just as fiery and just as passionate. Hey, verses 2 through 27 list the rest of the signers, 83 names in all. Let's jump down to verse 28. Now the rest of the people, and then he lists those who worked on the temple, and all those who had separated themselves from the peoples of the lands to the law of God, their wives, sons, daughters, everyone who had knowledge and understanding, joined with their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and an oath to walk in God's law, which was given by Moses, the servant of God, and to observe and do all the commandments of the Lord our God in his ordinances and his statutes. In other words, they ask God to bless their obedience and to curse their disobedience. They took an oath that tied their future to the will of God. And God brings two issues to the forefront of the people's hearts. The first is separation, and the second is participation. And these two issues are vital for you and me today. If we really want to live committed lives to Jesus, we need to separate ourselves from the evil influences around us, and then we need to participate in the activities and to support the institutions that strengthen our faith. Key again today, as it was in Nehemiah's day, is to separate and participate. First, notice the Jews should separate. To watch out with whom you hang out. Verse 30. We would not give our daughters as wives to the peoples of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons. In essence, they stopped sleeping with the enemy. They stopped intermingling their lives and families with pagans. As we've talked about so many times now, so often believers will marry unbelievers. This is tragic. This is a mistake. The Bible forbids two people being unequally yoked. Don't embroil your life in a relationship with someone who is of a different breed. A believer should never marry an unbeliever. Hey, when a Christian marries a non-Christian, understand, you get the devil as a father-in-law. That's never a good thing. An unequally yoked marriage becomes a perpetual wrestling match. Don't go there. But beyond marriage, verse 30 teaches us that we need to be careful about any entanglement with unbelievers. How many Christians have betrayed their commitment to Jesus after adopting the wrong circle of friends? Oh, she was such an outspoken Christian until she made the cheerleading squad. Oh, he was an on-fire believer for Jesus until he got that big promotion. Oh, they were actively involved in the church until they went off and joined the country club. Hey, understand, I don't advocate isolationism. How can we reach unbelievers if we don't befriend them and interact with them? Jesus was called a friend of sinners. The kind of separation we should maintain is not avoidance, but attachment. You shouldn't avoid interacting with the world around you. If you don't interact with them, how can you win them to Christ? But just don't get attached to their ways and their thoughts and their philosophies. Vance Havner put it this way: we are not to be isolated, but insulated, moving in the midst of evil, but untouched by it. We need to keep a healthy separation. But separation is only half of a believer's duty. Separate and participate. And participate in four ways. He lists them here the rest of the chapter. First, exercise your faith. Second, do your part. Third, give your best. And fourth, pay your tithes. Well, notice in verse 31, Nehemiah tells the Jews to exercise their faith. If the peoples of the land brought wares or any grain to sell on the Sabbath day, we would not buy it from them on the Sabbath or on a holy day, and we would forego the seventh year's produce and the exacting of every debt. In other words, the Jews promised to reverence the Sabbath day and the Sabbath year. You remember in Exodus, God told Israel to set aside one day in seven to rest their body, and one year in seven to rest the land. Both the soul and the soil needed replenishing. But both laws required faith. To take a year off or to take a day off to worship God means that I'm trusting God to do more with my six than I could do with seven. I think of the Chick-fil-A restaurants. You know, they honor this biblical principle. The Chick-fil-A website states, closed Sundays, it's part of the Chick-fil-A recipe. You know, the corporation wants employees to have a day off every week, one day in seven, to worship God and to spend time with their family and to rest from their labors. But I'm sure there are plenty of franchise owners who see that forced day off as an exercise in faith. They're giving up a day to Zaxby's, and they're trusting God to make it up in the other six. Guys, faith is like a muscle. If you want it to grow, you got to exercise it. I mean, look at me and all these muscles. It just doesn't come naturally. You got to exercise like I do once a year. But seriously, if you want your faith to grow, if you want your faith to beef up and bulk up, if you want a buff faith, you need to exercise. And here's how you exercise your faith. You study the Word of God. You pray, you fellowship with other believers, and you worship with all your heart. Hey, neglect spiritual exercise and your faith will grow flabby. Well, in verse 32, the Jews promise also to do their part. Also, we made ordinances for ourselves to exact from ourselves yearly 1/3 of a shekel for the service of the house of our God, for the showbread, for the regular grain offering, for the regular burnt offering of the Sabbaths, the new moons, and the set feasts, for the holy things, for the sin offerings to make atonement for Israel, and all the work of the house of our God. In other words, a temple tax was imposed on all Jewish worshipers. And Nehemiah understood the big picture. Their walk with God would ultimately only be as strong as the place where they were fed and led. Did you hear that? Ultimately, their walk with God would only be as strong as the place where they were fed and led, the temple. And what was true of the Old Testament temple is certainly true of the New Testament church. We need a place where we can go to gain strength. That place, we need that place to remain strong. That's why it's important that we give to our church as much as it is we take from our church. You know, the church is like a blood bank. Sometimes you go to get a transfusion. At other times you go to give blood, but you got to do both. You got to be a giver as well as a taker. The leaders say in verse 34, we cast lots among the priests, the Levites, and the people for bringing the wood offering into the house of our God, according to our fathers' houses, at the appointed times, year by year, to burn on the altar of the Lord our God, as it is written in the law. Here's another way they did their part. They all took turns bringing firewood to the temple. I think this is important. Maybe you can't support your church with gold and with silver, but everyone can bring a bundle of wood from time to time. Hey, when there's a need to move chairs or to vacuum or to pick up paper or to pass out announcement sheets or to serve grits on Sunday morning in the brook, if someone comes up and asks, would anyone be willing to lend a hand? You should step up and say, I would. Hey, we all need to bring some wood to the house of the Lord. You get enough firewood together and God might just ignite it and do something special. Yes, I would. Let's all do our part. Notice verse 35. They gave their best. And we made ordinances to bring the first fruits of our ground and the first fruits of all fruits of all trees year by year to the house of the Lord, to bring the firstborn of our sons and our cattle, as it is written in the law, and the firstborn of our herds and our flocks to the house of our God, to the priests who minister in the house of our God, to bring the first fruits of our dough. Hey, are you following suit there? Do you bring God the first fruits of your dough? Do you tithe? Do you give of your money to the Lord? You know, in the Old Testament, they were required to bring most everything, the first of most everything, to the Lord. The first fruits belong to God. In other words, they gave God their best. We're told they brought the first fruits of the dough, of the offerings, of the fruit from all kinds of trees, the new wine and oil, to the priests, to the storerooms of the house of our God, and to bring the tithes of our land to the Levites, for the Levites should receive the tithes in all our farming communities. Do you give God your first, or do you give God what's left over? Reminds me of the cattle rancher who boasted in church that he had decided to give one of his newborn calves to the Lord. Two calves were born that night, but tragically, one of them died at birth. Later, the farmer said to his wife, I've got bad news. The Lord's calf died tonight. I hope you always give God the best of your time and of your talents and of your efforts and of your resources. We need to participate. We need to exercise our faith and do our part and give our best. And finally, we need to pay our tithes. Now, let me clarify a point here. You give an offering, but you pay a tithe. The tithe is not yours. It belongs to the Lord even before you give it. Malachi chapter 3 accuses the people of Israel of robbing God. And they say, why? How did we rob God? And Malachi says, by failing to pay your tithes. Verse 38 says, and the priest, the descendant of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites receive tithes. And the Levites shall bring up a tenth of the tithes to the house of our God, to the rooms of the storehouse. Notice the word tithe means tenth. People say, well, how much is a tithe? Well, the word means tenth. The people tithe to the Levites, and then the Levites tithe to the Lord. Malachi 3, as I mentioned earlier, reveals that tithing is the one area in life where God challenges us to test him. He says this, try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. If you tithe, God promises to respond with abundant provision. And you know, I have never met anyone who tithed to the Lord faithfully and regularly that was begging for bread. Never. Let me encourage you to exercise your faith by tithing of your income. The 10% that I give each week, that I give from my paycheck, reminds me that the rest of it too belongs to the Lord. And I have to trust him that he can do more with the 90% than I could do with the 100%. And he's never failed me on that. He's always proved faithful. If you can trust God with your soul, surely you can trust him with a tithe. Well, chapter 10 closes, verse 39. For the children of Israel and the children of Levi shall bring the offering of the grain, of the new wine, and the oil to the storerooms where the articles of the sanctuary are, where the priests who minister and the gatekeepers and the singers are, and we will not neglect the house of our God. And I hope you leave tonight with that last line ringing in your ears. They all vowed, they all committed, we will not neglect the house of our God. Guys, separate from the world. Participate in your church. And then you can sing, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours, Lord. Well, in chapter 11, a lottery is held to pick the families who are now going to move in and live within the new walls of Jerusalem. It was the first urban renewal program in history. Verse 1. Now the leaders of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people cast lots to bring one out of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city. And 9/10 were to dwell in other cities. Now according to chapter 7, about 45,000 Jews returned to Babylon to the city of Jerusalem and its suburbs. Here we're told that 10% of that 45,000, or about 4,500, were chosen to move in and live within these walls that Nehemiah had built. We're told, and the people blessed all the men who willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. Apparently, it was considered a great honor to be chosen. These people voluntarily uprooted and moved their families into the city. Now, verse 3 through the end of chapter 11 gives us two lists. Verses 3 through 24 list the names of those people who settled inside of the walls of the city, while verses 25 through 36 list the other cities, the suburbs around Jerusalem, where people settled. Now, we're not going to read these names, but let's do scan through for a few applicable details. Verse 4 mentions the children of Judah, consisting of 468, quote, valiant men. In verse 6, the Hebrew word translated valiant means a force. It's sometimes applied to an army. At other times, it applied to a man of means and resources. You've heard the expression, he was a force to be reckoned with. These were men who had impact on others. They were a force to be reckoned with. That's the kind of person I want to be. I want to be a person of influence. I don't want to be a person you can just ignore. I want to be a force to reckon with for Jesus' sake. I hope you want to be that as well. Beginning of verse 7, Nehemiah lists the sons of Benjamin, and there were 928. Verse 9 tells us, Joel, the son of Zichri, was their overseer, and Judah, the son of Zenua, was second over the city. Notice, everybody needs an overseer, and every overseer needs someone who is second in command, someone who can help him carry the load. You know, sometimes it's harder to be second than it is to be the overseer. You know that. You have to be humble and willing, and you have to constantly be willing to serve and put others before yourself. You know, everybody wants to bat lead off and steal the bases and slide head first into home and score the runs. It takes a really unselfish person to bat second and to bunt the runner over. I'm sure Zichri appreciated Judah's willingness to serve as second. And I know that I am thankful for Pastor James. For over the years, God has called me to oversee, but he has also called Pastor James to serve as second in command. And he does such a wonderful job. He has been bunting me over for years, and I appreciate it. Well, verse 19 mentions the gatekeepers. With new gates, you need gatekeepers. And at Calvary Chapel, the ushers serve as our gatekeepers. They open doors, they direct traffic, they help people who are having problems, they boot babies out of the sanctuary nicely, gently, but they do it. They provide security for the fellowship. Reminds me of the little boy who was running down the halls one Sunday morning, making a lot of noise, and the usher had to come over and quiet him down. Later he said to one of his friends, he says, when I grow up, I want to be one of those hushers. Verse 22 tells us, also the overseer of the Levites at Jerusalem was Uzi. And trust me, nobody messed with Uzi. He was a straight shooter. He was the kind of guy that could blow you away. when he came to make a decision, it was always automatic. Uzi was a great guy, always a blast to be with. Just thought you'd get a bang out of all of that. Well, again, verses 25 through 36 mention the villages outside of Jerusalem. We jump down to chapter 12. Now, these are the priests and the Levites who came up with Zerubbabel. Remember, 90 years before Nehemiah, Zerubbabel led the first wave of Jews from Babylon to rebuild the temple. And verses 1 through 24 list those who served with Zerubbabel. In verse 24, we're told they served to praise and give thanks, group alternating with group, according to the command of David, the man of God. You remember in the days of David, the priests were so numerous that David had to organize them into groups. Each group served an alternating shift. Well, evidently, Nehemiah reestablished David's method. In verse 27, this list of priests ends and the subject changes. Nehemiah tells us about a parade. It is D-Day, or Dedication Day, for the rebuilt walls of Jerusalem. And everybody loves a parade. Absolutely. You know, when my kids were tots, every 4th of July, Kathy and I would pack them up and we'd head down to the little village of Stone Mountain for the annual Independence Day parade. Trust me, it was as lame a parade as it gets. A few stumbling clowns and a couple of horses and maybe one or two antique cars and, of course, the Stone Mountain High School beauty queen. She wasn't on vacation at the beach. And as a matter of fact, if you brought your bicycle, you could even join in on the parade. Hey, when the mayor of Stone Mountain is the main attraction, it's a pitiful parade. But you know what? My kids didn't see it that way. Oh, I can remember little Zach and Natalie. They'd be standing there and their eyes would be as big as saucers, wide open, gazing and gawking at everything that came down Main Street. They were thrilled. And it proved to me that deep down inside, everybody loves a parade. You certainly would have loved the parade that Nehemiah organizes here. Verse 27. Now, at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought out the Levites in all of their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgivings and singing, with cymbals and stringed instruments and harps. And the sons of the singers gathered together from the countryside around Jerusalem from the villages of Nephophathites. Maybe. From the house of Gilgal and from the fields of Geba and Azmaveth, for the singers had built themselves villages all around Jerusalem. And isn't that kind of a cool thought? The singers and the musicians all kind of live together in these little worship communities. You know, no work got done. The musicians and the singers all hanging out together. You know what happened. They were fun places to be, but no work got done. I mean, imagine the jam sessions that just broke out all the time, up and down the street. You know, people just jamming and singing and having a big time. Verse 30. Then the priests and the Levites purified themselves and purified the people, the gates and the wall. So I brought the leaders of Judah up on the wall and appointed two large thanksgiving choirs. One went to the right hand on the wall toward the refuse gate. This group was led by Ezra. They marched south past the refuse gate onto the fountain gate where they climbed up some stairs to the top of the wall. Verses 32 through 36 list the people in Ezra's group.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. In today's message, Pastor Sandy was covering some passages in the book of Nehemiah. If you're looking for a good example of servant leadership, Nehemiah is a great one to go to. He gave up his position in the palace to do the grunt work in building the wall in Jerusalem. This was not an easy task. He was faced with much opposition and encountered many enemies. but he helped the Israelites build a community and have a sense of purpose that was God-ordained. What a great person to look up to. Do you have someone in your life who leads but also serves? Or perhaps you are such a person, imparting this type of character to others. We trust that what you've heard today in Nehemiah inspires you to go out there and live your life in such a way that brings people together and also brings about what God's will is. If you liked this message and would like to listen to more here in Nehemiah, go to sandyadams.org and look under the Teachings tab. Each time you listen, Pastor Sandy brings sound biblical teaching. You'll continue to hear about real people who lived and struggled the same way you do today. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to the next edition of Sandy Adams Radio.